Hello, hello, and welcome back to the AMA podcast. I'm Estrella Garcia Lewis, and today I'm joined by a super exciting guest. She's the former VP of Marketing at Soapy Joe's, and she's the current advisor at IQID.
That's right.
Today we have the lovely Anne Mahler on, and her how old are you?
12.
Her 12-year-old son, Joe.
We thought we'd mix it up a little bit. We were on spring break, so I brought my favorite marketing critic.
And he's in his hockey outfit. This is exciting. Jude, do you know anything about sports marketing?
My friend's dad works for the Gulls and pretty sure Aztec basketball.
Oh.
Yeah, I heard him talking, or his son talking about running a game.
Oh, that's super sick. Have you ever gone one?
Yeah.
I'm sure you have a billion times.
This guy, totally. This is not his first rodeo on the microphone. He is not telling you that he got to read off the opening lineup the other day at the Gulls game, so...
Oh, we've got a humble Hobart in here. Okay.
I know, right?
How was that? What was that experience like? Tell me a little bit.
It was fun.
Were you nervous?
Not really.
It's something you love. Just for the viewers, because we don't have cameras out today, I want you guys to know, Jude is in his full rep today. He's wearing his University of Denver jersey, his Anaheim Ducks hat. He's here to represent. And I was at Chipotle last night, and it was a hockey jersey.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I was wondering 100%. If there was a correlation.
Totally. They're on the Dasher boards. Chipotle is all over it. I've been noticing them, too.
Mm-hmm. They're hopping on it. Yep. Do you play NHL, too?
Yeah.
Okay. That used to be my thing.
Get out.
Yeah.
Oh.
I would only buy the games. I wouldn't watch. I would just buy the games to play. Yes. Drop gloves. That was my thing.
Love it.
Alrighty, Miss Anne. I mean, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about your new ventures. Tell me about your previous. Just give it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love being here in San Diego. We are not from San Diego originally, so we are really fortunate to be just across the street from SDSU. This campus is so beautiful. But I never envisioned myself here when I started out. I am from the Midwest. I went to school in St. Louis.
Oh, wow.
I'm from Iowa. So it's just a real, like, treat to be out here, which I know sounds silly, but there's so much opportunity out here. I moved out here for Panera Bread almost 20 years ago. I was their regional brand manager to extend the Midwestern brand out here on the West Coast. And since then, I've had a real opportunity to work for some amazing brands, similar in restaurants with Qdoba.
Mm-hmm.
Such a fun brand in terms of learning a lot about experience, and then a lot of software. So ESA Internet Security, I spent almost a decade there, and that is a fabulous brand. Really entrenched in EMEA and APAC markets, but new to the U.S. market. So had a really good time, you know, bringing cybersecurity to the U.S. Through that brand and just going for it on the PR side. I learned a lot about PR from them. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's been a fun ride. You never know what you're going to get into.
It sounds like you took a lot of turns and stuff. I feel like coming to Panera, moving from the Midwest to the West Coast, what was that transition like? Tell me, because I just feel like having to market that, would you say it's a different market?
I would say for sure it's a different market.
Yeah.
And at the time, I mean, I had been working, that was my first job out of school. So I took the job at St. Louis Bread Co., a little regional brand, and they were acquired by Au Bon Pan. And it was just a massive opportunity to see a merger, an acquisition, a rebrand, and then to come out here to the Midwest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just felt like it was a dream come true. I was all over it. I'm like,
What point in your career did that happen?
4 years in.
Wow.
So 4 years in, straight out of St. Louis University. In terms of your question, though, on how it was like to transition out here, I brought my then boyfriend, now husband, with me. So I came out here, but that really gave me the confidence to be able to go for it. And you talk to him and he's like, I never would have done it without her. And you talk to me and there's no way I could have done it without him.
That's
so
beautiful.
It really worked out, and we were able to, after all this time, both still have a career path here in San Diego after 20 years, which has just been awesome.
To grow into something together and get to face this together is so, so cool. I feel like that's so strengthening for your relationship.
He's been incredible. I definitely married the better human. He is awesome.
I love to hear that. Yes. I really do.
Yeah, Judah backed me up. Dad's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I love, definitely.
Alrighty, in 2024, you and Krista Maffetti, marketing manager at Soapy Joe's, brought home 5 awards. I believe it was San Diego Shorty Award.
Shorty Award is different, but we've got the 2
Sandy Awards. Sandys. Yes.
Those are the AMA awards here. They are so fun. Oh my gosh. Yes. And then we also had some Stevie Awards. Those are the American Business Association. You guys, it is so fun to make fun work. Oh my God.
Which award were you the most proud of, and what made that campaign both successful and special to you?
I think it was the first one, which wasn't even out of that cadre of beautiful awards you just named, but it was for our Tunnel of Love car wash wedding. And I think it was because it was the first time we pulled it off. And I was like, astounded we did it.
Mm-hmm. And for the viewers that may not know, tell us about that.
So I was with my boss. We were in Vegas for the CES Consumer Electronics Show. So, you know, at the time we were working for Soapy Joe's, mm-hmm. and really just looking for inspiration anywhere, right? That's not a car wash show, but it is the best of the best in terms of experience. And we were sitting there in the airport on the way home. And, you know, it's right in January before Valentine's Day. We're in Vegas. And so the wedding thing, we were just like, oh, my God, we should do a Tunnel of Love. And I'm like, oh, my God, we have to do a car wash wedding. But it was
so cool
in January. And we pulled the whole thing off in 6 weeks. And
are you kidding?
I cannot believe we pulled it off. I still can't. It was amazing.
To birth that. And I feel like that's so outside of the box. Even the context of being at the CSM event is just already like...
It was awesome. And then I knew it was like a great match in terms of an employer who would let us take big risks and go for it and swing
for
the
fences. How important is that in this industry?
To me, it's everything. I mean, being able to truly, you know, people throw around the phrase, let's make something go viral. But unless you are willing to do something that actually catches somebody's attention, mm-hmm. or their heart or their imagination or something, it's got to be a little bit on the edge.
And I was just about to say, a lot of the times what resonates with people is something that's so far outside of the box. Like, people want to be surprised. People like to be taken aback. And I feel like Tunnel of Love, for example, it's like, okay, I'm surprised, but bring me along. And I feel like... You guys did a great job at getting San Diego involved. San Diego loves to be involved with Soapy Joe's.
Right? They really do. But mm-hmm. I think it's again, something that, isn't an opportunity they may not have had yet? Can you capture their imagination? I'm astounded. We had 20 people, 10 couples get married at that event. They legit showed up, and we had them sign the marriage certificates there. This wasn't we didn't cheat. There was no
like, they wanted to get married here. That's beautiful.
They did. It was hilarious, and I just am thankful that people want to get involved.
You're building a community, and that's what I think drew me to you so much, is because when I thought about the marketing, because I'm not from San Diego, so coming in blind, I was like, what is this Soapy Joe's thing, and why is it always in my face? Why is it always some sort of deal happening? Why is it always some sort of promotional challenge, whatever? And then I got more into community marketing and just how impactful it can be, I guess, to really know who your audience is and just to get to know the community around you. But, I mean, working in both large corporations and with those niche brands, how do you think a student should deal with or deciding what environment suits them best?
Okay. In my experience, when you're looking to make that decision for an internship in a smaller organization, you are going to be all hands on deck, and you're really doing something most likely outside of the literal specifics of what you signed up to do. And if that suits your personality, if you're curious and you like to just kind of fill in the gaps, mm-hmm. and experience a wide range of things, that would be a great environment for you. I think in larger organizations, which have more infrastructure and are more built out, it's more specific. There's more guardrails. The edge of your job is the beginning of somebody else's.
Very true.
And it's a lot more stay in your swim lane, which, I mean, there's positives and you know, drawbacks to that. So if you like a lot of structure and you're looking to learn a discrete, specific thing, I would go big organization. If you're looking for flexibility and just, you know, learn as much as you can, I would go a smaller organization.
Interesting. I've been hearing that a lot, I guess. I've been hearing that a lot recently in classes and stuff. It's been the agency versus corporation culture sort of topic. And you kind of notice they, well, they, I would say they intersect, they do. But it goes back to what you just said, where somebody else's job starts where yours ends and vice versa. And it's like the freedom and the experience that you gain can sometimes come across as limited.
Right.
And it, like, it all goes back to, like, that long-term goal. What's, like, at the end of the road for you? And for you, when you were coming up, did you know what that goal was? Did you have that overarching theory of what Anne was going to get done? Or did it kind of come about and snowball?
Oh, no. It came about and snowballed. I mean, when I think back to the earliest, what do you want to be when you grow up, air quotes, kind of thing,
right.
I wanted to be an obstetrical nurse. Like, what?
Sorry.
I know. Random. Not for me, I can tell you. And then when I entered school, I was in pre-law. I thought that sounded wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like to explore, like, all sides of an argumentation. And from there, I was like, I want to do something with people, air quotes. I spent a semester as a speech pathology major.
Oh, wow.
I just wanted to.
I spent a semester.
right? But then I ended up going to Spain, and I was supposed to be there for a semester, and I stayed for 2 years. So voila, you major in Spanish. I mean, you just
no
go
way.
For it. Yeah.
I like that, though. I am a firm believer in succumbing to the flow of life.
Right.
And letting it take you exactly where it wants to, because I feel like it leads you to something. I don't know. That intuition will lead you there every time.
Right. It worked out. I mean, my first internship was with TWA Airlines, which does not even exist anymore, right? But it was in the communications department. This was, I just am astounded by the opportunities that have come my way. This was so formative in giving me confidence right out of the gate. I was working at St. Louis University. TWA was a St. Louis brand, and I was in their communications office, but having come just from Spain,
mm-hmm.
kind of back from that thread of thought.
Your new year lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah. But they didn't have any Spanish speakers on staff.
Really?
And so I got to go on a 3-city tour, New York, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and L.A., to listen and be their, like, evaluator of the Spanish-speaking language as they were looking to redo some of the in-flight videos. And
that is so cool.
Right? I'm like,
what?
Yes.
You wouldn't even imagine that's something that you can do. That's so, so cool.
You never know. I took the job writing press releases and, like, sort of boring and little, like, you know, 250-word mm-hmm. blurb things for the literal in-flight magazine. And
now it's like, I can add value to you. I actually can contribute to you. Fresh out of college at that?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think no matter where you go, huge corporation compared to tiny little St. Louis Bread Co. where I went right after that.
Yeah.
I mean, those two things dovetailing right out of college, it just, again, blows my mind. But people are willing to give you an opportunity as a student. Take it. Anything.
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 Do you hear that, people? Underline the anything.
Take it. Oh, my goodness. My husband is a professor at another university. And, you know, we laugh all the time because there, you know, there is so much focus on academics. And for sure, keep your grade point average up. I'm not saying don't. But I really want, and when I'm considering hiring a student, have you had any professional experience, even something like this podcast today.
Really?
The way that you are building your skills and can come in and say, yes, I've done that before in a professional setting means so much to a hiring individual.
Mm-hmm.
So much more than what exact coursework and, you know, those
yeah.
kinds of things. Have you tried things? Have you gone out there?
Do you think students, like, overlook the more human aspect of getting into a career, I guess, sort of like developing those skills, developing connections, relationships, and just sort of immersing themselves in the environment that's going to serve them?
I would have to say my bias is yes, just because we live so much of our lives online these days. So if you
mm-hmm.
if you have the opportunity, you know, put the devices away, put the technology away, and go talk to somebody, like, yeah, we're all just people. We have for sure made all the mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Come talk to us. We've already done it.
More experience means more mistakes.
Yes, 100%. I've done that wrong already. You know, if you want to know about it, I'll tell you.
Wait, actually, that leads us into our next question. What was one of your most challenging marketing campaigns? What did you learn from it?
You know, I think one of the most challenging was building our AR game, our augmented reality game, and tying that in, not just straight gamification, but can we build in something for our philanthropy partner? And we ended up doing an aspect that had to weave in, and it was challenging because we were trying to marry all different objectives.
Yeah.
Tick a lot of boxes, But ultimately, I think the richness of that layering came through. And in, you know, some instances, it could be muddy, but can you get those concepts to be really clearly articulated and defined and have the discipline to cut off some of the things that may not
the
be
discipline.
Serving you? So,
right.
you know, everyone needs an editor. Can you listen to those moments? And I think that that was one of the most challenging. We were looking to bring together lead generation. We wanted to continue our reputation at Soapy Joe's for going beyond expectations from an experiential component. And then we were really trying to drive value and drive action in a novel way for Komen, San Diego. And so it really was a challenging thesis to go after. But also when you're building those net new experiences, there is no literal infrastructure there.
Yeah.
So it's challenging on the technical side. You have to find people who are willing to figure it out with you as you're doing it and kind of take some of those unknowns, which can be a large, a daunting task as a vendor to go in and not really know how much you may have to put into it to really make it right for the client on
wow.
our side. So that was a really good one.
Okay.
I like that one.
That's a depthy challenge, and that's a pretty broad one at that, because I feel like you just said, there are so many components that fall into that, because it goes back to the discipline. It goes back to, are you able to see outside of your own work and look towards your team or look towards what your client really wants? I was at an agency panel recently, and somebody was saying, he was just like, sometimes the client is just happy because the website has a new color.
Yes. And in that case, still lean into your data, because you can argue all day long if they like purple or green. But if you go to your audience and they say, I like purple, then, you know, that is what you do.
What did you take from what you learned at Panera and Qdoba, and how did you sort of apply that to what you did at Soapy Joe's?
Okay, what comes to mind immediately for me with Panera Bread is cause-based marketing. I remember distinctly being in their in the supply chain office, and we had just landed a contract for antibiotic-free chicken, hormone-free chicken. And at the time, I didn't know anything about this, and it was really a new movement to have all of that clean eating come all the way through what in essence is the industrial food chain.
Very true.
Working at something of that scale, and to know and just have my mind blown. They were working not just for what we had to serve today, but securing 2 and 3 year out contracts so they could have that much, and those local vendors could, you know, make those investments they needed to do to substantiate it. Really the depth of what that meant to be cause marketing, and it is literally an infrastructure thing. It is not a marketing tagline. Like, if you were doing it right, you've got the people in supply chain with the chickens doing the thing to support the thing. It is not a little starburst on the menu.
Wow.
It was really a mind-blowing concept to me.
That's
at that
really
time.
Interesting.
I'm like, okay.
Out of a lot of the professionals that we talk to, I don't think anybody ever talks about how it goes back to supply chain.
If we have got to be friends with these supply chain people.
Yeah, these are our relationships.
These are the relationships. Even coming more recently into Soapy Joe's, we do a lot of free car washes. And, you know, we leaned into a lot of our new product rollouts with ceramic and graphene. And you cannot sleep on the fact that you need extra ceramic and graphene when you make.
And it's even better that you know all of this.
Yes, absolutely.
For you to know this.
Well, thank you. Lesson learned all those years ago, and you need the operators. We must have those operators, and they're really well positioned to help us with innovation as well. If you can have those relationships and know where things are coming from and what those next gen product opportunities are.
Like, you can get ahead of the game.
You can get ahead of the game. And, you know, obviously it's a much longer competitive advantage if you can be winning in supply chain also, which helps you go to market, which helps you win in marketing.
I feel like you just gave me the secret formula.
Oh, my God, totally. Yes, distribution. That's
guys, sure. I just got a hack.
Yep, all about supply chain. Make friends with them.
I love that. I guess sort of in continuation on Well, because you've worked in B2C, B2B, and franchise models, what are the most significant differences in how you approach each of those marketing spaces?
Oh, man. It is really I want to say political, but I don't mean that in a divisive way, but you have to understand the the structural components of what brings somebody to the table in those relationships, right? Yeah. On a franchise side, this is somebody who has local ownership. It is their skin in the game. Maybe they're not quite so into the Tunnel of Love car wash. You know, they need to put cars through tunnel. It's maybe a little more esoteric. So can you bring a really functional and meaningful concrete business driver to some of those big ideas for the franchise model? B2B, I love the B2B space. I think it can tend to be really dry, but if you can treat a B2B lead, air quotes lead, like they are a human on the other side of it, and get their attention and blow their mind and, you know, have
maintain
fun
that
with
relationship.
Them,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, humor goes a long ways. Like, we're just, you know, one of my favorite campaigns that I saw, I've definitely got to like interpret this for a future campaign, but it was all about bacon. And it was like to IT guys, and they're like, we know you spend all day saving people's bacon. You know, and it was just a big frying pan with bacon. And I'm
sure love it.
If you took the, you know, meeting, you got a pound of, you know, a year of bacon to your door or something. But like, come on.
The promo that came with it.
Yes.
And you know what? I feel like that resonates. That's something I'm not going to forget. And you know what? I'll stick with Bacon Girl.
Right? Any kind you want. We will bring it to your door.
All press is good press.
Exactly.
Do you think marketers have become too obsessed with data and KPIs at the cost of creativity?
In my experience, those two do not have to be mutually exclusive. I definitely love the data side. And in fact, it really helps. Going back to the green or purple website, if you can show that the big ideas still bring in the numbers, I really think it substantiates what you're doing, and it also liberates you to try again. It gets you the next at bat if you can show what you're doing.
I think they're a powerhouse together.
Yeah. I mean, it really shows. And you know, it can show you things that you didn't even expect as the outcome, which I think is powerful, too. Just, you're not looking for confirmation bias that it worked. Are you looking at how it worked or the unexpected outcome?
Yeah.
And taking that. That's your next insight. That's the next thing you're going for. So I don't know. I tend to think that there's a set, I wanted to say constraints, but there's a set of conditions around any creative assignment. And if a data or a KPI is just one of those givens to a project, bring it on. It's part of the challenge. And I mean, as a creative, you are creating for the sake of art in very few cases. You need to create in a functional way.
I was just having this conversation with somebody yesterday. I was talking about just regular art. I think we were talking about like political art and stuff. I'm like, art is a vice. Art is a communication tool. Art's supposed to bring value and resonance. And I feel that same way about ads and campaigns too. It's like, what can you do to affect somebody? What can you do to sort of like get them to move, get them to tick a little bit? And I find it so, so, so fascinating just how ads and campaigns can get people to just have a complete different shift in their subconscious.
Yeah. Can you get them to feel something? I am proudly wearing today my Together shirt, which was made famous by Dawn Staley of the Gamecocks, South Carolina.
Really? Okay.
And yeah. I mean, you got to make somebody feel something. Mm-hmm. The whole point of this shirt is everybody watches women's sports, and it's become a movement of people who just want to say out loud that they believe in each other. And
I love that.
Right? This was founded. The Together is a media corporation that's woman-owned. Alex Morgan here on the right.
I love Alex.
I saw your light come alive, or your eyes come alive. You know, there are a couple of women founders in sports, and they've really gone out there and taken the opportunity to lift other people up. And I think if you can make art and lift people up and provide opportunity, it is such a powerful thing.
And I think that's so sustainable too.
Absolutely.
I truly do. And can you read the shirt out loud for the people that don't know? Because I was severely misinformed.
Well, this is the French version, so I am not going to, because I don't know how to speak French. But they made a version for the Paris Olympic Games last year.
Very
so
cool.
This is the French version. But, you know, it's something that really has taken people's imagination. And I think if you can, again, be making art that brings a light to people and what they're doing, and maybe their art in this case is sporting.
Mm-hmm.
on the sports field, I mean, soccer's a beautiful game, as they say, the beautiful game. And I think everybody has their own articulation of what they can bring to the table. And if we can capture that, especially as marketers, whether with an idea or a representation on paper, the visual arts, you know, music, anything to make people
evoke an emotion.
Yes, that is it. And if we get to do that for our jobs, hell yeah, I want to count that.
Hell yeah.
You know, no, I'm counting that.
I'm loving this because you're seeing marketing for exactly how I've always seen it. I'm like, yes, I want to make a move.
I want to make a move.
I want to make the people dance.
Yes. Yes. World Music Day is in June, and I picked that up from Qdoba. You know, back to one of your earlier questions on what I learned from the restaurant industry, Qdoba, for sure, the experiential marketing. I mean, they just crushed it in terms of thinking outside the box.
Really?
Yes, World Music Day was one of the fun events.
Tell me a little bit more. I don't know.
Okay, I'm still obsessed with this idea. When we were at Qdoba, we had basically a giant hamster wheel, and we wanted to have students at a university like pedal the wheel keep it moving. And like as long as the light was going, you know, we would be giving away free nachos or whatever it was. But
that is so sick.
Having that installation and just having people involved and just the crazy thinking. I mean, just wild.
Put them in a hamster ball.
Put them on a hamster wheel. Let the queso flow. Like, why not? I mean,
let the queso flow.
I'm still working with some of the artists there, and Jorge and Camille, they were fabulous, fabulous creative partners.
I love that. And I think to have a good team is having a good team that you love to work with and where you can appreciate their work is such a contributing factor to good work. But
yeah, I think so. I mean, it takes a lot of like psychological safety to be able to take risks.
Yeah. Yes. To even feel comfortable to like share your bold ideas, your cutting edge stuff.
Yes. Yes. Hear 100%. Me out. Human size queso hamster wheel. I mean,
hear out. Do you guys see her vision? Well, Anne, we're going to start to wrap this up, but we do ask one more question that I think is super fun and super important, and I'm super interested to hear what you have to say about it. So if you had to give one piece of advice to a younger version of yourself and to students like us, what would it be?
Oh, do good work. That's definitely become my catchphrase. I don't know. It just rolls off my tongue, so I'm going to have to go with it. Do good work. Like, and that means different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it allows you to meet yourself where you're at. Doing good work today may be a totally different definition than yesterday. Don't forget the progress you've already made. And know that the effort you have to give tomorrow may be more than you're giving today to be good work then. So
yeah.
I really think that everybody can have successes in their own ways. And if you do good work and you're looking to fulfill what you interpret that day as a well-spent day, helping people do it. I guess I'm expanding on it too much. But
no, I'm loving this.
You know, everyone knows what that is for themselves. And if they're doing good work to their satisfaction, I think everyone will really have a positive outcome. Jude, what do you think?
I love how you say that because you always say that to me. every time I have to do a project, it's like, no, another version. And you're talking about some presentation you're doing. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'm on V8. And I was like, dang. And you were saying how you should always just revise it and keep revising it. And
that is true. We were...
Words of wisdom from Mom. I like it.
Yeah. I was trying to show him the human side. I bust his chops for maybe some not great handwriting, but then I do like to show him.
The same way. Oh, it's a sign of a genius.
It is. But then I showed him my notes, and they're all over the place. I'm like, dude, I'm not too good, but, you know.
I am the pot calling the kettle. I want better for you.
For sure. We did a presentation, though, for a private equity firm this week, and, you know, it's so tempting to quit after V2. I mean, everyone knows you got to proofread, and realistically, you have a second version. But we went to market with version 8.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
I feel like that takes patience.
It takes patience, and it takes a humble ear, because I will say I presented V2 and V3, and people have feedback, and you take it, and you take it into consideration. And even if you've proofread it 80 times, you know, the person you're presenting this to and is ultimately paying for it is my client. Is like, oh, there's a typo there. I'm like, oh!
You're like, there is. Yep, this is true. I'll get V7 ready.
Yes, but I mean, in the moment, you're like, oh my God, absolutely. Anything you see. I mean, we all need that safety net. And so if you do good work, it just invites others to be themselves and do their best as well. So I'm happy to hear that my kids are listening every now and then, even if they won't tell me in the moment.
She's like, he heard something. Yeah, you know, my mom's always saying, she's like, as long as one thing resonates. Well, with that being said, I want you all to move forward today and do some good work. And Anne and Jude, I want to say thank you guys so much for being here today. I was so excited to have you here. I really, really was.
Thank
and
you.
You were a pleasant surprise, a very pleasant surprise. But go forward, everybody, and please stay tuned for the next one. Have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.